You're listening to the best of the Roto Experts in the Morning.
These Astros pitchers really are a formidable force, whether they're using something or not to spin, get that spin rate up. They are dominant, 1 through 4, 1 through 7 almost, in their starting rotation.
Yeah, Dan Plesac on the MLB Network was saying last week that this is the best rotation that he's seen
since like the Atlanta 90s, Braves, maybe?
Since the 90s Braves.
The 90s yep. Braves, right? And here's the thing, Scott. When you think about those guys, three of them, right? At least three of them are Hall of Famers. Maddux, Glavin, and Smoltz probably will wind up in the Hall. Do you think that there's this kind of potential? I mean, Verlander is probably a Hall of Famer. I don't know that any of the other guys are necessarily writing their ticket to the Hall of Fame just yet.
It's a little early for that.
It's a little early for that.
Yeah, but Cole is having a breakthrough season. In a big way. I was talking to Tom Verducci about him, and he just said the tweaks that he's made in his mechanics and going from his two-seamer, which was very hittable, to his four-seamer, which is much less hittable, has made a big, big difference there for him. Lance McCullers, it's really just about staying healthy.
Yeah, I mean, there's the guys like McCullers, there's McHugh out there, there's a lot of arms that they got, and I think, to be quite honest, Scott, I think Charlie Morton is a really prototypical case. I mean, this is a guy with Philadelphia and one or two other stops, you know, was kind of a nondescript pitcher, and then all of a sudden, the last couple of years in Houston has really skyrocketed and become a viable fantasy asset. You know what I also thought was funny as we talk about this? Man, karma is really a female dog sometimes, Scott, because, you know, we talk about these Astros. we talk about these Astros pitchers, right? But Trevor Bauer also started over the weekend on Friday, and he had his worst outing of the year. He gave up 5 runs in 4 1/3 innings pitch. It was Bauer's first non-quality start since April Fool's Day. Maybe karma came around to bite him for talking. Maybe he should keep his mouth shut and stay focused on the Indians, huh?
No, I don't think there's anything to do with it. It's a fun storyline.
You don't believe in karma? You don't believe in karma? I'm trying. I got an angle here, Scott. I got an angle.
No, it's baseball. You know, the guy just didn't have his stuff.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. It is just baseball, says Scott, the King Angle. Scott Angle. Before the break, we were just listening to some great work that Scott was doing down there with the Blue Jays. You know, we've been talking about this Blue Jays closer situation ever since the Osuna news came out. And Scott, it seems like he's talking about, you know, the dreaded word that we talk about with the football running back, the committee, the timeshare. It sounds like it's really more than one person. He's going to play matchup lefty-righty, huh, Scott?
Yeah, you know, that's what Buck Martinez was saying. Buck is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Blue Jays and a former catcher for them. It seems like Gregor Chisholm, the beat reporter, was actually honing in more on two guys, because I was saying, look, you know, I'm asking for fantasy purposes here. Is there one guy necessarily? Because there's 3 or 4 that people are talking about. He was able to at least trim it down to 2, but I think what Buck Martinez was saying, though, in a certain situation, if he feels like or even Axford, better against a certain hitter for whatever reason, he might not hesitate to go with them. And if Clippard or Tapera don't pan out, you know, they at least have those other two guys. So right now, like I was saying a few days ago, this is an ongoing audition right now. It's a timeshare and an ongoing audition.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So, you know, it's kind of it reminds me right now, Scott, of the Patriots running backs. You know, you don't really know on any given week. But as we say, though, you were down there, and the Mets, oof, they did work last night at home, putting up 12 runs on the Blue Jays. Devin Mesoraco starting to maybe ingratiate himself to his new fans. I mean, he goes yard. He scored 4 runs on the day. Mesoraco with a big night. Syndergaard does, in fact, get the win. He only goes 5 innings. The Mets then, you know, kind of blow up for him. But Syndergaard was good at the plate, too. Huh, Scott? Getting a couple ribbies early on?
Yeah, 2-run double. It's just, you know, they were light. Jaime Garcia and the bullpen up. And, you know, Mesoraco's a guy right now where he's, you know, the batting average is very low. He's hitting .185. And, right. You know, it was just his second home run of the season. You know, when you look back at his career numbers, you know, everybody will talk about that possible breakout season of 2014 where he hit 273. But he's a lifetime 232 hitter. I don't know if you get too excited about it just yet from a fantasy perspective. You know, this is a guy that you hope that he hits 250 and maybe can give you a dozen home runs or more the rest of the way if he stays healthy. That's always been the big issue. The power is certainly still there, but can he hit for the batting average? It seems like he doesn't stay in the lineup long enough to get warm.
Yeah, and that could definitely be an issue. Hey, Scott, I was watching a part of this game as well. I was watching around in like the fifth inning. I think it was Rosario. It might have been Rosario. Hits a drive to right center field, right? And it literally, you know, it goes off like the corner of the padding at the exact angle that it bounces right back into the field of play. They replay it, you know, and it in fact did kind of bounce back almost off that orange, you know, piping off the wall. And the outfielder that was there that could have grabbed it was going to be Kevin Pillar. And let me tell you something, if Pillar can't get to it, then hardly anybody in Major League Baseball can. This is obviously one of the best, you know, kind of defensive outfielders we have in our league. And I know that you were able to kind of catch up and spend a couple of minutes with him yesterday as well. What'd you talk to Kevin Pillar about?
Yeah, we'll listen to it right here. Kevin Pillar is off to the best start of his career. And what I really spoke to him about was mechanically, what did he do different to get off this type of start? We'll also hear he's a big Raiders fan and fantasy football player.
All right, let's check that out. Scott with Kevin Pillar.
With Kevin Pillar of the Blue Jays. Kevin, you're off to a great start this year. I was reading that maybe that's due to some changes you made in your swing, shortening your swing, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I think as competitors, we're always trying to get better, and that's what I do every offseason is I start swinging the bat pretty early, and I start trying to make some changes that I feel like I see elite hitters doing, and really, it just comes down to swinging at good pitches.
Was one of those guys your teammate Justin Smoke? Because he made some really significant positive adjustments last year, also hitting his swing. Did you speak to Justin all about the adjustments that he made?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's probably my closest friend on the team. I spent a lot of time with him. We never really got into mechanics a whole lot, though. But really, it was more me observing him on a daily basis, the way he went about his routine, the way he went about his work, and just the kind of even keelness he kept throughout the season, despite having, you know, a monster year. It was fun to watch. It was impressive to learn from, and it's something I'm trying to do right now.
And also, he became a much better two-strike hitter. You think you've improved in that regard as well this year?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just understanding that getting to two strikes is part of the game. It's how we get to two strikes, and sometimes pitchers are going to execute pitches. There's really not a whole lot you can do with those pitches. So getting to two strikes and you know, capitalizing on mistakes is a big part of the game. And sometimes they execute their pitches. You know, there's really not a whole lot you can do with them anyway. So, you know, striking out is part of the game. Obviously, there's a time and place when it's very necessary the ball needs to be put in play. But the more times we can, eliminate some of these spots in the strike zone that are real tough for hitters to handle, the better off you're going to be.
So you came into this week leading the major league in doubles. Is that something you take some pride in, and maybe a result of these changes that you made?
Yeah, I mean, double is something I've always hit a lot of. It's the way I've been hitting them, using the whole field, not necessarily just hitting them down the line and beating the ball at second base, but I've really just been driving the ball real well. And, you know, obviously, you know, power is a big part of the game. I'm not a, you know, really big guy, so, you know, homers never really been a big part of my game. But if I can, you know, rack up the doubles, you know, kind of those are what I look at as my homers is doubles. So, you know, if I can hit 40 to 50 a year, then, you know, it's like a power hitting 40 to 50 homers a year. And that's kind of what my my standard is, how many doubles I can hit in a year.
So you play fantasy sports, not that you know how baseball works, but because of the power and speed you've been generating, I'm sure you heard this more often, and how do you react to it when people say, hey, Kevin, I have you on my fantasy baseball team and you're doing well for me?
I mean, it's part of it. I mean, fantasy's a big part of you know, the reason why people watch games today. I mean, especially baseball with how many games we play. You know, a lot of times you're not going to get marquee matchups. You're going to just see some games midweek. It's kind of a good way to, you know, keep fans involved in watching the game. You know, it's unlike football where you only play maybe, you know, once a week or twice a week, maybe three times a week. It really keeps people involved in the game. And it's not like we're really trying to go out there, put up numbers for people that are playing fantasy sports. But like I said, it's a good way to, you know, keep fans involved in games, you know, like a Tuesday game here, interleague game. Most people probably aren't super interested unless you're a Blue Jays or Mets fan, but it keeps some casual fans interested in the games.
So you play football. How long have you been playing? How'd you do last year, and how much are you looking forward to this year?
Fantasy football?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been playing for a long time, but obviously being in a big league clubhouse for the last 4 or 5 years, it's become a little bit more competitive, especially in this clubhouse the last couple of years, because we've had a lot of the same people involved in the league. A lot of guys have been here for a couple of years now, and it's just friendly competition. You know, it's something that, you know, something we look forward to having a draft night and having fun with it. And then it's kind of a added incentive to stay in touch with some of your teammates over the off season. But yeah, fantasy football is definitely, you know, it's a fun way to get even more involved in NFL football. You know, I'm a big Raiders fan, so I enjoy watching Raider games. But, you know, besides that, it gives me a little additive incentive to watch some other games.
So you sound like the kind of guy who doesn't break that fantasy rule, that one of the first fantasy rules is don't draft with your heart. You won't draft a guy because he's a Raider. But, you know, what do you think of some of the offseason moves that they've done? Jordy Nelson, Martavis Bryant, Doug Martin.
Oh, no, I do break the rule. I always draft with my heart. I always take Raiders on my team. But, you know, I also play to win, too. But I've been known to take Raiders maybe a little bit earlier than they should have gone. But some of those moves have paid off for me in the past. But yeah, they've made some good moves, and obviously bringing in a head coach that you know, hopefully is going to steer this franchise in the right direction is the most important thing.
Kevin, thanks a lot.
All right.
Hey, Scott, it's really interesting how they talk about you playing fantasy football and fantasy sports in the clubhouse, you know, kind of as a means of camaraderie, just like anybody else, right? Like, athletes are just like you and me, especially as we kind of get older, maybe grow distant from some of our friends geographically, can't get together as much. Fantasy sports is really a way to bring people together, huh, Scott?
Yeah, every major league clubhouse has a fantasy football league, and if the guys are not playing with each other, they're playing with their friends back home. You know, that's a great part of community, you know, and fantasy sports. You know, the players, they absolutely love it, and it brings the fans and the players together. You know, when we'll talk about it later this year, Adam White, Wainwright having started big league impact years ago and in multiple cities around the country, you know, including here in New York last year with the Yankees. You know, for charity, people can actually play fantasy football against their favorite major leaguers and sit at a table with their favorite major leaguers and, you know, have something in common, getting to meet and hanging out with them for a great cause. So that's awesome. And I really enjoyed this interview because he was very insightful and forthcoming on a lot of things, like saying that, you know, fantasy sports, a lot of people wouldn't care about a Tuesday game between the Blue Jays and the Mets unless they're playing fantasy. And then talking about his performance, too, you know, he's off to the best start of his career so far. You know, you look at the stats this morning, you know, and Kevin Pillar he's exceeding expectations right now with what he's doing.
Yeah, he's hitting 300.
He's hitting an even 300. Now, look.
Slugging, 506.
Yes, he's got a 341 BABIP, which has to come down, but he's got four home runs, 25 RBIs, and already 8 stolen bases, which puts him on pace for his best year since 2015 and maybe even to crack that. But what really jumps out is when you look at the advanced statistics, his line drive rate has gone from 20.4% to 31.6%. That's very stark because his career rate is 21.3%, and then his hard hit rate is the best of his career at 36.1%. So maybe expect a little regression here, but, you know, Pillar's a guy more known for his defense, and, you know, fantasy players like him for some cheap speed if he can get it. But yeah, now he's a guy that's pretty much a staple. He's like your fifth or sixth outfielder on your fantasy team.
Scott, you know, we've been talking about closer situations for a lot in the last couple of weeks, you know, if there's some kind of moving pieces there. I know you had an opportunity to talk to Buck Martinez, I believe. You were down there at Citi Field yesterday. You had an opportunity to talk to him about that Toronto closer situation as well. We got Chris Bavona down there in the Fantasy Pit of Misery. Scott, do you want to frame this at all? You talked a little bit to Buck Martinez about this?
Yeah, we were so... You know, we've talked a lot about this Toronto closer situation. So what I did last night is before I spoke to Buck Martinez, who's the broadcaster for the Toronto Blue Jays and former Major League catcher, I spoke to Gregor Chisholm, and you can follow him on Gregor MLB on Twitter in the clubhouse. He's their beat writer for MLB.com for the Blue Jays. And I said, look, what's going on with the closing situation here? Who do you think it is? And Gregor told me outright that he thinks it's going to be a timeshare, that he thinks that it's going to be Tyler Clippert against lefties and Tepera against the righties. Huh. And he doesn't see O in the mix at all, that that Tepera was the guy that they won against the righties because he was the eighth inning guys. They feel like Clippert, even though he's a righty, he's going to be more effective against the lefties, and that they don't have a lefty out of the pen. So they're not thinking about they're not thinking about Axford. And I think, you know, we'll have to listen to that when we come back from the break.
No, I think we can fit it. Okay.
Here's how Buck Martinez reacted to what I spoke to Gregor Chisholm about.
Scott Engel with Blue Jays broadcaster Buck Martinez. Buck, I was talking to MLB.com beat reporter for the Jays, Greg Chisholm, about the closer situation. He seems to believe right now it might be a share between Tepera against right-handers and Clippert against lefties. Is that the way you see it, or you think one guy's going to emerge?
I don't know that John's going to do anything other than match up. He has guys that can get lefties out, like Tyler. He has Axford, who's a power guy. He's been using Axford in the middle of the order, wherever the inning might present itself. So he wants power against the good hitters, and then he'll go with Clippert or Tepera according to where he's in the lineup. But I think they have a very good combination of pitchers down there.
Do you think there might be a situation where one guy emerges as the guy at some point?
I don't know if that's going to be the case because even with O down there, you have three guys that have closed in the past. You've got some experience. I don't know that anybody is going to anoint anybody the closer. And I just think John's done a good job of mixing them all up because they've all pitched very well.
Buck, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
See, what you got to take from that, Dane, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What you got to take from that, Dane, is that, you know, Gregor Chisholm did say there might be some instances where it is situational. So it was like I was saying, you know, we were talking about, I believe, yesterday, the day before. There really isn't one guy there. You know, Tyler Clippert, lefties are hitting 171 against him. So you know, I think that the guy who wants to get lefties. Right now, I think he's going to be rostering either Tepera or Clippert, probably leaning towards Tepera.
Our guy, George Kurtz, puts up a great closer article to give you, you know, the insight into those situations. Some of these situations are in flux. You know, we've heard that in Toronto, they may play a little bit of matchup righty-lefty with Clippert, with Tepera as well, maybe even some others getting in the mix, depending on how it goes. But there's some, we talked about in Atlanta, how maybe there's a short hook maybe for Vizcaíno moving forward. You know, Scott, also in Cleveland, Andrew Miller, you know, kind of comes back off the disabled list. But yesterday, he, you know, he gave up two runs in only a third of an inning. He defecated the mattress as well. So owners, yeah, I know you like that, Scott. That's why I'm trying to bring it in a little bit more for you. So let's go to the George Kurtz article, and you can find this on rotoexperts.com. Obviously, rotoexperts.com is, in fact, the mark of fantasy excellence. Scott, one of the situations I think is interesting is down there in Baltimore, because I have shares of Zach Britton on my DL, and it seems like he's starting to, you know, ramp up a little bit. Maybe he was throwing, like, batting practice. He may even get a minor league rehab start, or outing, shall we say, in the next week. It sounds like Britton may, maybe right around the start of next month.
Yeah, and, Darren O'Day and Brad Brock have been kind of going back and forth there, you know, in that situation. So I think, you know, they need to get the stability back there. You know, maybe Brock is a guy that actually gets moved after the trade deadline. Darren O'Day is also on the DL right now, so it's pretty much Brock, and you know, maybe Miguel Castro is an option if Brock starts to fall apart in the interim.
Okay, we go to St. Louis, and I mean, listen, can anybody make sense of Greg Holland? You know, I, to be quite honest, Scott, I had some shares of him, and then the first couple of outings, right? You know, because I was like, listen, I need some saves. He had 30-plus saves in Colorado. Then, you know, maybe it's because he didn't have spring training or whatever the case may be, but he got blown up his first few outings. He now has gone four straight scoreless, but I'm not sure if the Cardinals are actually going to give him another chance in a high-leverage save situation. What do you think about St. Louis? It looks like Kurtz, you know, is also hedging his bet on Greg Holland.
Yeah, Holland, you thought he was the guy, but Bud Norris did a very impressive job with the Angels last year, and he's done the job effectively since ever he's gotten the chance. So maybe it's a case, and I'm just, you know, spitballing here, but going from experience here is like, why mess with success? If Bud Norris is doing the job and Greg Holland doesn't, you know, why mess with Bud Norris?
Okay, so we do think it could be Bud Norris there. What maybe
who is definitely a friend of the show and a Roto Expert subscriber.
Oh, really? Big shout out to yes. Bud Norris, though. Let's get Bud on the show. We should ask him directly.
We can.
All right, let's try and get Bud on the show, Scott. Maybe sometime next week. Maybe when he's still holding the closer job, and we can get the answers straight from the horse's mouth. That's why you have to tune in to Roto Experts in the morning. Okay, you know, I mean, first of all, Scott, this is like the longest running show in the entire fantasy industry, correct?
It's the longest running morning show in the entire fantasy industry.
That's what I'm saying. You got
since 2010.
That's what's up, okay? So if you want to really know what you need in order to win your leagues, win a little bit of cash, now that it's legal, keep it locked to Roto Experts in the morning. However, Scott, one of the most interesting situations, I think, now is in the Los Angeles, you know, in Los Angeles with the Angels, right? Kenyon Middleton goes down. It could be, you know, this could be Tommy John. This could be an opening for someone to grab this job for the foreseeable future, someone that may be available. I mean, Justin Anderson, Blake Parker, Jim Johnson, Cam Bedrosian. These are all options. How do you see this breaking out?
I think, you know, Parker had the opportunity, got to save
me
the other night.
Yeah.
And
Justin Anderson closed out the win over Houston, I think, earlier in the week also. It wasn't a pretty save.
Yeah.
You know, he gave up some base runners.
No, it wasn't.
But like, you know, but could it be, like you said, with Toronto, could this be something of a rotating committee?
Again, you know, sometimes with these situations, it's about doing it on the job. And you know, fantasy players want instant answers. Okay, who's the next guy up? And sometimes there isn't an apparent next guy up. If Cam Bedrosian can keep his velocity up, I think he's the guy that they wanted to do it. You know, he's done it in the past only to get injured. I think if he stays healthy, my money's on Bedrosian.
Your money's on Bedrosian. But check this out. You can play along with us and see if you could figure it out, okay? We got a poll question up here at FNTSY Radio. The question is, who do you think will be getting saves for the Angels now that Middleton is on the shelf? You know, it's Bedrosian, Jim Johnson, Justin Anderson. There's also the idea of potentially, you know, Blake Parker. Or is it someone else? You know, could it be someone else? Do they let Mike Socha come out there? Do they put Otani in that role? Could it be someone else? Who knows? You can go ahead and vote. We got a poll question up right now at FNTSY Radio. If you want to join the show as well, remember, the number to call is 844-843-6879. But for some other closer situations, you know, check out the article. It's on rotoexperts.com. George Kurtz does a great job analyzing the closer situations kind of pretty much every week. And then at the bottom, he literally goes team by team and tells you who the closer is, who's next in line, if anyone's on the DL, and if there's kind of like some deep stash sleepers that you can think about. I definitely recommend it. If you're in a league where you need some saves, check out George Kurtz's work on rotoexperts.com. And now, because of the ruling that happened in the Supreme Court, states have the opportunity to make this legal. I think this is a very big decision here for all the kind of, gamblers out there, for some of the fantasy players out there. What wound up happening here, Scott, and I think this is very, very important, the Supreme Court actually struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act that came out in 1992. And what this now means, Scott, is that states can go ahead and make their own decision if they are going to legalize sports gambling. This, you never thought New Jersey would be necessarily a trailblazer and a leader here, but that's what happens. And, they're all set up at Monmouth Park and other places in New Jersey, but we are on the precipice of potential sports legalization in this country. It's now a state-by-state issue, and you got to think a lot of states are going to introduce some bills because, quite frankly, Scott, they want a piece of the pie. They want to get some of that cash.
Yeah, all these states certainly, it'll help tax dollars, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Of course, like you say, New Jersey leading the way, and I believe they're prepared to take some in-house bets within a few days. Other states, yeah, such as New York and Pennsylvania, may not be far behind. This is historic. We have some good coverage over on sportsgrid.com. Go check it out. Craig Carton, what he was saying about it yesterday, obviously very on top of the news. HBO was very on top of this months ago, because when the Las Vegas Golden Knights came in to play in National Hockey League, I think that meant a step forward, because you had an actual professional sports team right near the biggest sports books in all of America. So, people like Chris Christie certainly resting easier today and more clear about this today. And, then there's there's a lot of talk about how is this going to affect fantasy sports.
Right.
How is it going to affect DFS? And, the DFS companies like FanDuel and DraftKings are going to want to get involved. But, like Craig was saying on his show yesterday, they have to be tied to brick-and-mortar casinos. So that's both companies put out statements yesterday that they definitely want to get involved. They both have work to do. There are racetracks, et cetera, like Monmouth Park in New Jersey, where possibly they could develop a partnership with, conceivably. So, and will it hurt fantasy sports? Well, it may change the DFS landscape. We have Colin Drew on tomorrow. Maybe we can ask him about that, get his opinions on that. But in terms of DFS, let's see how the companies deal with this. How is it going to change the rake of the DFS companies, et cetera? Mm-hmm. There's some speculation that it's going to hurt fantasy sports overall, especially the DFS companies. But I can't imagine that seasonal fantasy football, which I think is always going to be huge, is going to be hurt by anything like this. Because, that to me, that's a different hobby in itself. People gamble, play fantasy football for sure, but I think everybody loves the whole exercise of drafting and trading and everything, so that's really not going to be hurt in my estimation.
No, I agree with you. DFS may be something different, right? Because that was for the people that really kind of wanted a little bit more action, shall we say. I think you're absolutely right, Scott. It will never kind of replace, shall we say, season-long fantasy sports. I think it's really interesting, though. I think fantasy kind of really helped this ruling happen. And the way I say the reason I say this, Scott, is because, people, had tried to challenge this ruling, years ago. I mean, the state of Delaware tried to challenge this in 2009. Jersey tried to challenge it once before, I believe, in 2014. The Supreme Court wouldn't take it up. But what's happened is a shift in society, Scott. It's really no longer kind of taboo or in the shadows, shall we say. People always thought it would be you got to knock on a door and say a password to get into these kind of clubs where you can gamble, or the image of the kind of people that are out there at the racetracks just ripping up the newspapers and smoking cigars. But I think fantasy has kind of shed a little bit of a light that this is not kind of high-risk behavior, as it were. You know what I mean? And so now I think societal views are changing, which is maybe why the Supreme Court took this up. You mentioned the financial gain that states have potentially in front of them. You mentioned New York as a state not far behind. Places like Connecticut, Iowa, Mississippi, West Virginia, these are all states that have already enacted state laws as well. You mentioned that the Golden Knights are already there in Vegas. Obviously, the Raiders are moving as well in the next year or so. I mean, most of the leagues put out statements. And I think it's kind of funny, Scott. You know, most of the leagues put out statements trying to say that we still need to, you know, quote unquote, protect the integrity of the game. You know, they're worried about fixed matches and point shaving and refs on the take. But the funny part is, like, that was happening already anyway. And it could be illegal, but people are betting anyway. It is a multi-billion dollar, you know, industry, and yeah. Now the states get a chance of the pie. I want to ask you one other thing about this. I saw, you know, all the leagues had different statements and things of that nature. Tony Clark, who's the president of, you know, the Players Association here for Major League Baseball, he referenced something that I didn't really necessarily think of. He also talked about the impact of this ruling, Scott, on player safety, which I thought was really interesting. Do you still think in 2018, maybe players have to worry about, like, goons coming to break your legs if you don't, you know, perform the way that, you know, the good old boys want you to perform? You think that's still something that players maybe even need to be concerned of, to be, you know, under the thumb of some bad guys?
I don't know. That sounds kind of outlandish.
That's what Tony Clark said. That's what I mean. I was like, wow. You know, it sounds like some of these leagues still have kind of arcane, draconian views on this, right? Is it really still about player safety? Do you think, like, you know, Vegas and these casinos, they're not the only place you can bet anyway. You know, there's apps everywhere from mybookie.ag to, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings. I mean, it's a different age we're in, right, Scott?
Yeah, you know, I've already always heard rumors of, you know, certain assistant coaches in certain professional sports, you know, being able to, you know, tell bettors, you know, some inside information. You know, I can't go into too much detail there, you know,
sure.
What I've been told, unfortunately.
You got to protect your sources.
I think that, you know, if Tony Clark's coming out and saying it, I think it sounds outlandish on the surface, like I was saying, but, you know, it's up to the leagues now, I think, to just button up and make sure that, you know, they're protected, at least from the outside on sports betting. But it's not like this kind of stuff didn't exist before and people always found ways to bet anyway. You know, of course, you know, when you're talking about sports betting, people have visions of, you know, the mafia and, you know, backdoor parlors and stuff like that. And stuff like that. I don't know if I'd be worried about player safety any more than I would be normally. To me, it sounds kind of outlandish on the surface. But then again, maybe Tony Clark knows something I don't. So, you know, maybe I'm not the best expert to speak on that. That I'm just speculating.
No, that's fair enough. But, you know, I think overall what we can say, and fantasy, you know, has really helped, this idea of gambling on sports has come kind of out of the shadows, I would say. I mean, you talk about how many people, this would never replace, you know, season-long fantasy sports. So many people play fantasy sports. Almost everyone is in a March Madness pool. You know, people play box pools all the time for the Super Bowl. So I feel like it's coming more into the mainstream. And then, Scott, honestly, if you look at Europe, you know, and places like William Hill and some of these other books, they have, you know, betting windows pretty much in England, just like it's an ATM. You can get a bet down almost anywhere, you know, just walking the streets in Europe. So, I mean, maybe we are sliding a little bit more towards that kind of societal view of gambling. And I personally think that's a good thing. And I would imagine most of the listeners to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network would agree, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Sounds good. I definitely did want to lead that because, to be quite honest, Scott, that just gives more people more opportunities to win a little bit of cash, and that's what we want to do. And I'm going to tell you something. One place you can go, really quick, Scott, one place people can go if they want to bet a little bit of cash is try on going over to mybookie.ag. You can make your own player props, Scott. The player props tool allows you to avoid sharks winning 90% of the money in DFS, okay? Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. Forget having to create multiple lineups. Ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches. Go to mybookie.ag, open a new account, enter the promo code FANTASY, F-N-T-S-Y, and you'll receive a 50% deposit bonus. All right, just go open an account, use the promo code, get your bonus, and then you could use the player props tool. Choose your player prop, collect your winnings, and let me tell you something, Scott. This Saturday is the second jewel of the Triple Crown. One of the things I really like on mybookie.ag, you can do horses like head to head. So, for example, Scott, on the Kentucky Derby, there was a horse that I liked. His name was My Boy Jack. He started at 30-1, okay? But I liked him because he was a deep closer, okay? And I liked the closers in the Kentucky Derby, especially when there was going to be some pace in the race. He only finished fifth, okay? So you would think, oh, maybe I lost my bets, but I had him heads up against three other horses that he beat straight up. So why I went away with some cash on the Kentucky Derby on the second on the first Saturday of May. I'm hoping to do it again on the Preakness this Saturday, Scott.
All right, go for it.
We're down with the king. You know what it is here. A little Run DMC here on Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm Dane Martinez, and now I am down with the king, Scott Angle, Monday through Friday. If you want to be down with the king, holler at us at 844-843-6879. You can find me on Twitter at Spittin' Speeds. You can find Scott at Scotty Roto X. But now we are joined, and I am overjoyed to have this guy join the program. It's bright and early for him all the way up in Canada. I'm talking about Gabe Morency. You can hear him all over this network, Game Time Decisions and the like. But when I thought, Gabe, when I thought of this betting decision coming down and I thought of the Preakness happening on Saturday, I was like, we gotta get Gabe on Roto Experts in the Morning. How you doing? I know it's bright and early. Thanks for joining us for a couple minutes, Gabe.
Yeah, you know what? You guys get lucky considering right now I'm in Halifax, Nova Scotia, a place in Canada that I don't get to. Canada's so spread out. So, a lot of Canadians don't really see a lot of other parts of the country just because it's so expensive to travel, it's so spread out. So I'm in Halifax right now, and it happens to be, it's like the only place ever, guys, that in the world, it seems, that's an hour ahead of everywhere else. I'm so used to traveling to the West Coast, and all right, I'm 3 hours behind, et cetera. You know, you've got your central times, but it's a bizarre Atlantic time. It's 1 hour ahead, so it's actually 8:40 a.m., which 7:40, I don't know if I could have pulled off, but 8:40 I could do, so let's rock. And I'm outside right now, outside my hotel, because I woke people up last night in my hotel. I'm staying in like a student, like residence type of deal. All the rooms were packed. And I was doing a late night podcast. I woke up like the entire hallway. So this morning I'm like, all right, man, I'm not going to wake these guys up at 7:30 in the morning. The walls are thin. So I go outside, think it'll be all peaceful and stuff. There's construction everywhere. It's loud as hell out here this morning, but I'm ready to rock.
All right, fair enough, Gabe. Do me a favor. Don't get written up by the RA, okay, this day, because I'm sure that's been in your past. But we'll catch on that another time. Gabe, here's what I wanted to ask you about this Supreme Court ruling. I mean, 7-2, you know, everyone thinks it's like opening the door to sports betting. And you know, it's obviously going to be a state-by-state thing. What I want to ask is, I've heard two schools of thought. I mentioned to Scott yesterday that, like, Vegas is actually the loser in this because they've kind of lost their monopoly in this country on physical gambling, right? One side of this is like, is Vegas down on this? Because now I can go to Atlantic City. I can go in Delaware or Pennsylvania and other states. I've also heard another school of thought that now that this is out of the shadows on people's phones and kind of legal, right, you're going to create more people that want to bet. And if they get a little taste of it in their home state, they're going to naturally then want to go to the big amusement park that is Las Vegas. Do you think Vegas is a winner or a loser in this decision?
It's a great question, Dane. And really, you know, there's a debate going on about this right now. And it seems to be a lot of people outside of the desert that are proclaiming that somehow Las Vegas gets hit the hardest. And I was wondering, I've been thinking about this as well, and Jake Cornegay, who's the top odds maker in Vegas, down at the Westgate Superbook, and you know, he was asked about this, and he had a great answer in which he stated, everybody said Vegas was going to be done in the 80s when cities start to get casinos. I mean, now it's commonplace. There's pretty much casinos in every city, right? It's a casino across the street from Camden. There's a casino right next to Busch Stadium. Like, there's stadiums in conservative cities in America even now. And Vegas has only grown. And another instance of it, look, I bet on sports, Dame, and I really don't give a crap whether the Supreme Court tells me, oh, I'm allowed to do it or not.
Right,
I was already doing it. I was already doing it, and I was already still going to do it. And look, you know, I've been betting since I'm 12 years old. I'm 47 now. It's been a long time. And I still like going to Vegas.
Sure.
You know, I've gone to Vegas, Dane, and placed my bets in my hotel room online. You may be able to place a bet in Delaware, Dane. You want to spend 3 days in Delaware in a hotel room?
Yeah, no, there's some other things to do in Vegas, Dane.
What are you going
to
do?
There's exactly. There's a rhino out there that we could all go visit.
There's a cheetah out there.
Yeah, I don't think the strippers in Delaware are quite on the level of at Floyd Mayweather's club in Vegas, right?
Fair enough.
No, but that's honestly, look from a business standpoint, guys. Oftentimes, what do we see across the street from a gas station? A gas station. Hmm. I mean, you figure, well, is there room for another Starbucks in the world?
Yeah, evidently, I see a Starbucks and a Dunkin' Donuts on the same block.
Yeah, exactly. Evidently, yes, there is. And also, I think Vegas looks at this as an opportunity. There's going to be a lot of states right now that really don't know how to run a gambling operation or don't want to run a gambling operation. Who are they going to ask? Who are they going to consult with? Probably the people that have been doing this the longest. So I think Vegas looks at this as an opportunity. I mean, listen, if California legalizes sports betting, Dane, that's the big enchilada there.
Because that's the threat right next door.
Half the people in the sports book. Yeah, half the people in a sports book on any given day in Vegas are actually from California. But with that being stated, Vegas has seen this coming for a while. It's not like they didn't know this shit was coming. And also, who's to think that the sports books that were out of Vegas aren't just going to start taking over all over North America right now, right?
Right.
And they're going to move in, and they're going to run the shop in Delaware, and they're going to run the shop in Missouri, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the death of Las Vegas, the Raiders are going there, Dane, and no one's going to care about that, right? I mean, I know. I heard tickets for the hockey game last night in Vegas, $4,000 to sit ringside. You couldn't even get that for a Ranger game. So I think Vegas is going to be just fine.
Yeah, and you make a good point because you would think that, you know, if people are just going to dive into sports betting, they're going to go with reputable names like the Wynn and the Borgata and stuff
Westgate,
like that. And
yeah.
It could become a change.
Exactly.
So that, you know, that's a good point. What I want to ask you is, though, you know, there's been some speculation about the effect on fantasy sports. And, you know, the daily companies are not going to want to get in there, but they'll have to be associated with brick-and-mortar casinos, at least from a seasonal perspective where I have the most experience. Fantasy sport football is unique in its own right, and I don't think it's going to hurt fantasy football. But I think it helps, Scott. How do you think it affects fantasy daily and seasonal?
I just think it opens up, it brings everybody into the same room right now. I mean, I believe that 70% of people who play fantasy sports or fantasy football, I should say, bet on football. It's one and the same crowd. Let's be real. And I find it's going to be funny to see all these DFS sites that for years proclaimed that they weren't gambling now going to jump on gambling the first second that they can. And I talked about it yesterday, guys, or 2 days ago. Look at FanDuel, Paddy Power. Paddy Power / Betfair, supposedly really close to finalizing the deal to purchase FanDuel. 10 million customers right there. So I think we're just going to sort of see the merging of the two, Scott, where fantasy players will be encouraged to gamble and the gamblers are going to be encouraged to say, hey, you know what, play some props right now. This is pretty much fantasy. So I just think it's sort of like a rock concert, Scott. It's like mixing Metallica with Kiss. It's good for everybody.
Yeah, it's like a Live Aid benefit, huh? I like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's up
Gabe,
for everybody now, you know?
Gabe, I want
like
to get to
old tour, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I will say this, maybe Vegas doesn't go down, but I do think eventually some of this cost of regulation and the VIG is going to be passed on to the better, unfortunately, when everybody needs to regulate
thing.
It. And so you and I,
you
and I, the savvy bookie, there's not going to be a minus 110. It's going to be minus 115. It's going to be minus 120. But we'll talk about that.
Dane, and also,
go ahead.
Let's say, you know, I can't wait. I'll come down. We'll all go out. We'll go down to Monmouth Racetrack. We'll have a great time. We'll go to Atlantic City at some point in time. But let's be real, Dave. When you wake up, bro, on a Sunday morning and you want to get a little action in on the Jets, are you driving out to Monmouth? You going out to Atlantic City or are you getting on your computer still?
I'm going to mybookie.ag, baby.
Exactly. So, you know, there's sports betting.
You.
It's nice. The way I put it is, people said, oh, Morenci, now it means, you know, you can go anywhere, you're going to go there. I said, listen, I'm not going to Delaware just because they have sports betting, but it means right. if I'm in Delaware, it won't suck as much now.
Fair enough. Hey, let's turn our attention real quick, Gabe, to another event that is happening kind of close to Delaware this weekend, and that is the Preak Nasty, the second jewel of the Triple Crown. I wanted to get your insight. Gabe, here's the thing. I mean, Justify went off as the favorite. He did, in fact, win. And, he, you know, now with the Preakness only being 2 weeks after the Kentucky Derby, a lot of the main horses, they decide to not even take their shot at Justify at Pimlico and will be waiting for him in Belmont. Because of that, I think it's only an 8-horse field. Most of these horses were not in the Kentucky Derby. I only see Justify and Good Magic, I think, and maybe Lone Sailor as well. You got Justify as a huge morning line favorite. Good Magic, the only one even close. I know Justify didn't, you know, broke the curse of Apollo, right? Didn't really run a win as a 2-year-old. With that kind of with lightly raced horse, now coming back 2 weeks later, is that any cause for concern on this horse?
No, you know, I mean, it's a good point, Dan, because that's what it really comes down to. And someone who owns a racehorse right now, that's the biggest thing that you're concerned about immediately after the race.
Right.
How's the horse? How's the horse the next day? People don't realize just how much of a violent bodily function this is for these horses to run that hard. And, you know, listen, my horse is a beater that can run once a week, and we hope that he can. So when you're talking about these fragile thoroughbreds like this, it all comes down to the health. From what I understand, there was a little talk about Justify's foot being a little soft. Baffert says, no, he's fine. It's interesting, Dan, because, listen, you've been to these races before. You know, normally, most of the horses that are in the Derby do come back for the Preakness, and the Belmont is when you got the fresh mercenaries coming in. It's almost as if, though, it's a short field this week. It's almost as if, though, everyone's almost conceding this. That, you know, we're not going to be able to beat this horse here. Yeah. We're wasting our time. We can get him maybe in 4 weeks, et cetera, down the road at the Belmont. I mean, he's a 1-2 favorite right now. It's a short field. He's got a good post. And some interesting connections here, of course, with Bob Baffert, with Justify. Guys, every time Baffert has won the Kentucky Derby, he's won the Preakness.
He goes ahead and
he's never not won the Preakness after he's won the Kentucky Derby, which is amazing. And, of course, going back to American Pharoah, well, who was he trained by? Bob Baffert, 2015, last Triple Crown winner, of course. So there are some connections here. It's too early for us to proclaim anyone who says, oh, this horse can't be beat. It's not about whether the horse can be beat. It's whether he's going to be physical, strong enough to be able to run at Belmont and run well. But as far as this Saturday is concerned, yeah, chalk it up, guys. He's a 1-2 favorite.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to parlay Justify with a Golden State Warriors over the weekend. Warriors
I
are
like
out
that.
Back and Justify wins.
Let me ask you this real quick.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Dane. The Associated Press actually reporting that they're going to test Justify's Bruce Heel this morning. And like Gabe says, not a major worry. But Windstar Farm also owns Quip. Do you think Quip has a good shot, you know, maybe to finish second or give Justify a challenge?
I do. Everyone's talking about Good Magic, obviously, with good reason. But I think Quip is right there, actually, and I think Quip is going to be part of a lot of the exactas, trifectas, and exotics. There's only 8 horses here, and good call, Scott. Yeah, Quip is definitely going to be on my ticket. Listen, everyone's going to be playing to Justify Good Magic exacta here again, right? I don't really see a problem with it, but you're not going to get paid a lot, so you're going to have to find that third horse and try to nail down the trifecta here, and I would go down the road here with Quip, another Baffert-trained horse.
Fair enough. Let me ask you this, Gabe, and get you out of here, right? You said you can't really make any money on Justify going off with these short odds. You mentioned Quip. You got to put in some of your exotics. I've been noticing, let me tell you how I made money on the Kentucky Derby, Gabe. They got now these head-to-head bets on mybookie.ag and others. I had a horse that I liked. I liked the deep closer, my boy Jack, right? Who started off at 30-1, went all the way down to 6-1. Yeah. You know, but what, you know, I had him though head to head against every other 30-1 horse in the field because I liked him as a closer, and him finishing fifth was good enough for me, right? And my boy Jack, I had him against Solomini and others. Are there any horses maybe that are lower down? You talked about Quip. If you can't win on Justify, maybe head-to-head route? Are there any horses you like with longer odds that might be a good head-to-head value? And do you like that way of approaching a bet with such a strong favorite?
Yeah, I don't. I don't have a problem with it because, you know, you don't have to worry about the other horses. Scott will know this, being a NASCAR guy. I'm a fan of the NASCAR matchups at times, too. Right? You know, I don't know if the guy's going to win a race, but I know he's going to do better than, you know, these two or three drivers.
Right.
And, you know, it's a nice way to get some of the money back from trying to win the race. So yeah, I don't have a problem with the head-to-heads. I haven't seen the matchups yet. So, you know, the matchups will start to pop out. Still early in the week right now, the matchups start to pop up. You know, Friday night, they'll start to really put the head-to-head matchups up. But, and I'll post them on Twitter. I'll throw some love out there for a guy that's a regular guest on my show. And we're talking, this is Paul Bovey. You know, Bovey's the type of guy that bets daily, right? So to him, these are like New Year's Eve. It's like amateur hour. He's like, oh, God, all you bozos come out of the woodwork, right, for these big triple crown races. But he's a simple follow on Twitter. It's just at Paul Bovey. He works over at VegasInsider.com. And he always posts head-to-head matchups for these races. And, dude, the guy crushes it. He won like $10,000 on the Derby Saturday with the head-to-head matchup. So check out Paul Bovey's Twitter. I'll post out some head-to-head matchups as well. But let's just keep it simple, guys. Put Justify in every sports parlay. If you're playing something on Saturday, play the game and just tag it with Justify.
There you have it. That is Gabe Morency. You can hear him all over this network, Game Time Decisions and the like. He's the way to help you win some cash, and now it's all legal. Thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us, Gabe. We'll talk again sometime if you can make it this early, all right?
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. Anytime, bro.
Who is your AL MVP? Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, Aaron Judge, or other? Jake, how would you respond to that poll?
Well, first, I'm going to respond to the initial part. You're incorrect. It's not the quarter pole. The quarter pole is the last fourth, not the first fourth. So let me just correct you right there. So
fair enough. We are a quarter of the season. We are in a quarter of the season. Go ahead.
There you go. Hey, look, quarter. I actually didn't know that. Like, I didn't know that. I saw somebody tweeting about it because somebody said the same thing you did on Twitter. Somebody corrected them, and I didn't even.
It's terminology. It's all terminology. Yeah. It's all good. We're a quarter of the season.
Semantics.
Yeah, I don't even think there's a question in my mind, because you talk about war, and Jose Ramirez has a better war than Mike Trout right now, and I'm not even going there because it's Mookie Betts. There's no question about it. Mookie Betts has more runs than RBI combined. He leads the league in that. He's got, what is it, over 70 of them. He's got 13 home runs, 11 stolen bases. He's hitting .364. Like, there is no question right now at this point it is Mookie Betts. Now, whether he keeps that up, as you said, do we expect him to keep that up? No, but at the same time, if we're talking right now who has been the MVP, it's not even a discussion. It is Mookie Betts.
Yeah, I mean, look at the categories. You break it down, right? Betts, batting average, .364. Trout, .290. Judge, .307. Betts wins. On-base percentage, .438 for Betts, .431 for Trout, .410 for Judge. Betts wins. Slugging percentage, Betts .734. The other two are not even close. .600 and .590. Betts wins easily. He also leads all three of them in homers, which I don't think we expected. He's second among the three in RBI. Judge is the only one that leads that category. It's a non-Betts category. Stolen bases, it's Betts over Trout 11-8. Runs scored, it's not even close, 46-34-33. So it's Betts. It's clearly Betts, and that's it.
You want the kicker, Scott? He's played four less games.
Yeah. And we haven't even gotten into OPS.
These two, yeah, his OPS is over 11, around 1150, I would say, right now. These two guys think Mookie Betts is the AL MVP. 44% of you
the
poll
no.
agree. They know it. They can lock it in.
The other
they can lock it in.
The other 56 are wrong.
They could lock it in with still 115 to 120 games left in the season, right in the ballots. It is La La Land. I mean Moonlight. I mean La La Land.
Weekdays, 7 a.m. Eastern on FNTSY Radio and on your popular podcast providers.